This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood to kick up your heels at a unique weekend getaway, explore minimalist art, or a musical adventure along a mighty river. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. A stiletto stroll through the Warehouse District is just one of the events attracting women from across the country to the Crescent City this weekend as that summer festival for women known as Festigals gets underway. Joining me to talk about this unique celebration is Festigals spokeswoman Sandra Dardis. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi, it's always a pleasure to be here with you, Diane.
You know, this festival just keeps growing and getting more exciting every year. I believe this is your sixth year?
It is. And you know, every year, Diane Lines, who founded Festigals, says, we're not going to do as much. We're going to cut it back. And then we get so excited and we find so many wonderful women who can speak on fabulous topics. And before you know, the program is bigger and better than ever.
How did Festigals get started? What was the original idea?
Well, you know, Diane is a successful meeting and conventions planner. Diane Lines, yeah. And this is her 25th year with her company, Accent DMC. She was in the aftermath of Katrina and the BP oil spill and the downturn of the economy. She just one day was contemplating, you know, what had happened in the transition through those challenges and the role that women played in it. We are basically the ones who kiss the bobos when our children fall down, and we're the ones who provide the encouragement for our families and our spouses. And she just thought, you know, there's a festival that celebrates tomatoes, literary festivals, jazz music festivals, even decadence festivals, but nothing celebrates women. So she decided to create a nonprofit organization that inspires, connects, and celebrates women while supporting causes that are important to them. And that was the birth of Festigals.
So it's a big party atmosphere, but it's also an empowering event.
It is.
What's new this year?
Well, this year we sort of have broken the weekend into three major components. One is the New Orleans Women's Conference at Festigals that takes place on Friday, July 29th. We'll have professional development. Women are sharing their experiences and their insights with other women. So we have the professional track with presenters on social media, networking, leadership, developing certain skills. So they're real takeaways for professionals. We also have personal enrichment, and that's where we have things about doctors maybe talking about sexual dysfunction or a dialogue about sex with women. Mignon Mary talking about how to burn fat, boost brain power, and feel better faster. So we have four sessions on those kinds of topics. And then we have a cultural conversations section, which is your kind of thing, I know, and that's on New Orleans culture. And there we have a fabulous one-on-one interview with Leah Chase, who is just such a treasure and icon for our city. We have a voodoo priestess, Sally Ann Glassman, there, who's talking about how this Jewish woman from Connecticut got into voodoo and became a Haitian voodoo priestess. And she'll actually do a little ceremony. Women Who Make Parades, which is the founder of the Crew of Nicks, the founder of the Pussyfooters Dance Troupe, and also a woman who was very involved in the beginning of Muses. And Ladies Who Make Music, Jermaine Basil is going to be there, along with Helen Gillette and Stephanie Jordan. We also have Festi Talks, which are kind of like TED Talks, where it's eight women doing very rapid-fire five-minute presentations on a variety of topics. And then our pièce de résistance that day is the electrifying Carla Harris, who is the top of the wealth management chain for Morgan Stanley, 26-year veteran, a gospel singer who has had five sold-out performances in Carnegie Hall, just a truly amazing woman. She is our keynote speaker in the middle of the New Orleans Women's Conference luncheon that day. Her pearls of wisdom will just rock you. So that's our Friday. And then Saturday we celebrate. So that's when we have our Bodacious Bras for the Cause brunch, and we have our Stiletto Stroll Second Line Parade.
Let's talk about the Bodacious Bras. What are they?
You can see some of the bras at Steinmart on Veterans right now. They're up on a wall in the back by the lingerie department. Beautiful decorated bras that represent women who have had cancer. We brought That's along gorgeous. Gail Veruso's tribute to her mom, which is called Joycelyn's Butterfly Garden, because her mom loves butterflies. And another little sample I brought for you, because you can do more than decorate a bra. This is a bra purse that Natalie Barranco of Coffee News has made, and the cups are decorated with coffee beans. Isn't this darling?
That is gorgeous.
And this has been in my car, so my car smells deliciously like coffee. Then at the actual brunch on July 30th, the top three fundraising bras were auctioned off live, as well as some gorgeous pieces of art. And then we have the stiletto stroll, and that's when we sashay down the street. Glowing. We'll be glowing this year because our theme is shining light on domestic violence. And while the Bodacious Bras for a Cause brunch benefits women with cancer during their treatment and recovery through the Cancer Association of Greater New Orleans and Breast Duration, the stiletto stroll will benefit the New Orleans Family Justice Center, which provides awesome services to women and family who are dealing with sexual assault and domestic violence.
Now, during the stiletto stroll, you guys have a grand diva?
Angela Hill, who we all know and love, will be our grand diva this year. And she will lead, 15 marching troops like the Pussyfooters and the Chorus Girls and the Amelia Earharts. We start off with a party at Harris, then we line up and we go through Fulton and zigzag through the Warehouse District and end with an amazing party at Mardi Gras World with Rockin' Doopsie. So it's really like three parties in one.
Yeah.
Our whole weekend is a pause for a cause. We all live such busy lives, and this is a great opportunity for women to do something for themselves. This is truly about women. It's inspiring, connecting, and celebrating women.
Sandra Dardis of FestiGals, thanks so much.
Thanks.
The 6th annual FestiGals celebration gets underway with day-long activities Friday and Saturday. FestiGals is headquartered at the JW Marriott on Canal Street. More info at festigals.org.
Did you know that there is a link between the humble elastic band and an intricate chandelier? It's all in the design. The New Orleans Museum of Art has about 150 items on display in an exhibit called The Essence of Things, Design and the Art of Reduction. Eileen Fleming took a tour of objects chosen for display.
I'm Mel Buchanan. I'm the Rosemary Curator of Decorative Arts and Design at the New Orleans Museum of Art. This is the first design exhibition we've done here at NOMA, looking at 20th century and design to now.
Is this considered a new part of the art world?
We have a great decorative arts collection here at NOMA, but it's more traditional, a lot of 19th century and earlier material. We have 20th century, but more craft and studio.
I understand also this is a show from Germany. Is this the exact show?
This is a show organized by the Vitra Design Museum in Germany, almost entirely from their permanent collection. An amazing collection of design that they put together. We're one of two American venues for the exhibition. The exhibition was also at the Philbrook Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And as we get going, what is good design?
Good design can mean so many things. I mean, you can think about the way something looks or the way something is made, or even, then that's what this show to me is very interesting, get into ideas behind the design, the context and theory behind it. I don't think there's an easy way to define what good design is. And this show is looking at the role of simplicity and reduction in design. And there's a great deal of irony in that because simplicity is very complicated.
Does it necessarily have to be functional?
I don't think good design has to be functional at all. You know, a painting is not really a functional object, and it spreads ideas about culture and society and what we want and what we don't want. I think that a chair or a teapot or even a toothbrush, you know, being a little playful, but a chair or an artwork is an artwork in that same way, that it can have a point of view, it can make a statement about the world.
And right at the very start, our chairs. So let's take a look. And what makes these chairs special?
When you first walk in the exhibition, you're greeted with some chairs that they're not falling necessarily within that function category. This is a section called Inspiration, and it's designers that are looking to maybe a spark of creativity to give a good design. You know, they're not necessarily practical solutions. You'll see that elsewhere in the show, good practical mass-produced solutions. These are about the spark of creativity. One of my favorite objects in the show, the 85 lamps. It's a chandelier by an Amsterdam-based group called Droog Design, and it's really the idea, like, well, a chandelier, let's just take a bunch of bare light bulbs and hang them from cables. They hang in a big cluster from the ceiling. I think it's just stunning, and it's, well, simplicity, but it's a complicated simplicity, too. I love it.
It's a puffball that lights up.
Yes, it looks just like a puffball or a dandelion that you'd blow away.
And that chair looks to me like a shopping cart that's been sort of adapted to look like a sled almost.
I mean, some of these objects are working with found objects, transforming them into a new use. So a tractor seat turned into a stool. But the shopping cart, I mean, it's playful. Take a shopping cart, turn it into a chair. But there's also a commentary there. The artist calls it consumer's rest. So we're talking about consumerism. So that is a great example of a chair that's making a statement about our consumerist society. When you first walk in the exhibition, there's this wonderful prologue section that has 54 different everyday objects. So for me, it's so exciting to have Post-it notes, an egg carton, a golf ball, a Ziploc bag, all of these things we use every day here on view in a museum. I'm forced to think about them in a new way. Instead of them just being these anonymous tools I use every day, starting to think about, you know, this object, you know, the credit card, a battery, a bullion cube, as conscious, ingenious designs that someone has thought through.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. What is that made out of, this little rainbow plastic chair?
This chair, which some people have been calling the bubblegum chair, I mean, it's actually made from recycled plastic. So just letting those different colors of recycled plastic melt together over a form. But this chair is part of a larger group that are looking at designs that are all made from a single material. So plastic, or an all-wood chair, or an all-concrete chair, a foam chair. But then here at the front, this recycled plastic chair.
It's a showstopper. What brings an IKEA bookcase that is probably in millions of homes to a museum floor?
This is making the point that simplicity and reduction can be about the packaging and design process on those early stages that's allowing these designs to be economically packaged so that they're, you know, more affordable when they get to the end. So IKEA manages to sell these bookcases for a very low amount because they can ship them so effectively, and then they've also outsourced part of their labor to you and me. When we get home, we put the bookcase together ourselves.
Tell me about the names Prologue, Logistics, Unity, Lightness, Abstraction. What do these mean?
The show is divided into 13 sections that all address different ways that simplicity can be part of the design. On one level, it's a survey of design. You know, all the big named designers like Corbusier through Ray and Charles Eames are in this exhibition, so we can show just what is design. But for a real design aficionados, this has a strong thesis. It's a really academic show looking at the facets of the art of reduction through categories like logistics or sign or context, lightness, geometry.
Okay. Mel Buchanan, curator of the design show, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Eileen.
The Essence of Things runs through September 11th at the New Orleans Museum of Art. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The Adventures of Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn comes alive as Summer Lyric Theater closes its season with the Tony Award-winning musical Big River, based on the book by William Hoffman, with music and lyrics by Roger Miller. Director Michael McKelvey joins us with actors Bob Pavlovich and Ray Proctor. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Michael, this has been a season of adventure for you. How did you come to choose Big River?
It's always been one of my favorite shows. I love the story. I love Miller's music so much, and it just resonates with me.
This is set pre-Civil War in Missouri. Tell us about the journey.
This is Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Bobby Kelly is our Huck, and is following him through all the exploits following his adventures with Tom Sawyer. So we pick up with Huck staying with the Widow Douglas and Miss Watson, and then his estranged father shows up, Pap, played by Bob Pavlovich. They have an altercation. Huck runs for the road, and in running away, he encounters Jim, who is a runaway slave, and they team up and go on a series of adventure, helping Jim to get to the north and find his freedom, but also helping Huck discover some things about himself along the way, not only just becoming a man, but how he is as a human being.
Bob, you have two roles in the production. You play both the father and the sheriff.
Yes, I do. Pap, Huck's father, who's been an absent father for a while, he comes back based on his need for liquor and his need for what he's heard now, Huck's money that he and Tom Sawyer were able to get in their previous adventure. And by hook or by crook, he's going to get it.
And Ray, you play the role of Jim, a slave in this production.
Jim has heard that for whatever reason, they're about to sell him down to New Orleans. And he makes a decision that he would rather run away and head to the free states of Ohio in an attempt to buy his wife and children back. So he's on a journey of escape.
And what attracted both of you to the roles that you play?
Pap, for me, is an interesting character because he illustrates where Huck could end up if Huck doesn't get away from him. Huck comes to the fork in the road. He admits that the Widow Douglas and Miss Watson have raised him really well, teaching him how to read and write. He's going to school, whereas Pap offers the life of freedom, living on the land, hunting and fishing, having fun, don't have to eat off a no plate anymore. You can cuss whenever you like. But there's also a great deal of abuse that goes on. Pap is a very controlling figure and resents all that highfalutin education that Huck's getting. It's at that juncture where Huck's got to make that decision. Do I enjoy this free life and everything that comes with it? Or does he conform and move into what at that time was mainstream society and pursue that life?
Ray, what about you? How were you attracted to the character Jim?
As a performer of color, as a black man, it's an interesting time. As an artist, there's a huge discussion that's happening now about race and representation in all forms. What does racial representation mean in music? What does it mean in movies? Right now, our society is dealing with race on such an epidemic and pandemic level. I think it's really important that we do stories that humanize and make people see what is common, what is similar in people.
Talking about race, there is some sensitivity with the use of the racially offensive N-word. How is it handled in the production?
We discuss it as a cast, not just our African-American cast members, but also like the white cast members who have to say it. And how do you feel about that? And how is the word being used in that context, in that scene? Is it helping set up a character for us? Is it being used as it's a class status of the time? Is it being used as a derogatory term? How is the language being handled? I don't know. It's going to be up to our audience to view how they feel about it. But we've handled it, I think, as responsibly as we could.
Can I say something? It's interesting. A number of times we've had that, do we take this one out? I've had to say, no. You have to leave that one in because we can't make these people better than they were either. They used that word. Sometimes they do use it derogatorily. Sometimes they do use it as an insult. But sometimes you go, I think it's important that our audiences go, that's how they referred to these people. As a person of color, as a black person, you have to hear it too. One of the sweetest kids in the entire show who gets one line in the show has to say it. But when he said the word, I heard it and I was like, that is such an ugly word and it hurt. And it made me go, how does Jim, the character, how does he take that word? And I think you go, y'all been calling me this for so long, I'm just let it go by.
Right.
Let's talk more about some of the themes that are being explored.
What does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to have worth in our society? Not class status, but who are the people who matter to us? I think that's one of the adventures that Huck goes on and the journeys he goes on is to discover where does he fit in with our grand society, and how does he view people? Where does he hold worth in people? I think a lot of it has to do with who we can hold faith in. Jim, when we first encounter Jim, Jim doesn't know what's going to go on with Huck, because he admits to Huck that he's a runaway slave. And then Huck makes the declaration that he's going to help Jim no matter what. That's humongous. And to the point where we don't even think that Huck realizes what he's getting into.
For me, the fun of watching Bobby, who plays Huck, not only take the journey, but you see him go through the moral and ethical struggles as he narrates the things that are happening and the scenes he's acting out, and as the character Huck moves through it. He has the tussle of, well, Jim's a runaway slave. Society dictates to me, and as he's been taught morally, he needs to turn him in. But Jim has revealed himself to Huck as being just like everybody else. Yeah, he's called property, but he's not this subhuman or inhuman piece of property. There's a wife and kids and his longings and desires to reunite the family and move them on.
What is it that keeps people coming back to this story?
To me, it's about treatment of one another. And I keep coming back to this book and saying, why can't people just realize and look at each other and say, we have to have some kindness in the world. We have to have some understanding of what the plight is for all of us. All of us as members of this human race. And I think Twain summed it up so many years ago. But we just don't get the message.
We haven't resolved our nation's history. We haven't been very honest. We don't know how, in many senses, to negotiate healing. We don't know how to begin communication between races. We are always developing a language. And where we are right now in 2016 is a part of a continuum. This story is a part of that continuum that was written a very long time ago. But we still need these lessons. We still need to hear this story so that we can go, oh, we can't just sit back and pretend it didn't happen. How do we talk? This is a story about healing and humanity.
For me, it's Mark Twain and his plain-spoken ability to deal with complex issues. What makes it timeless is the humanity that we see in the story.
Actors Bob Pavlovich, Ray Proctor, and director Michael McKelvey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Summer Lyric Theater's Big River opens Thursday with performances running through Sunday in Tulane University's Dixon Hall. More info at summerlyric.tulane.edu. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.